The Enron scandal produced its first criminal indictment today. The Justice Department has unveiled obstruction of justice charges against the accounting firm Arthur Andersen. These are felony charges. They were filed in Houston this afternoon. In a letter, Andersen's lawyers warned that an indictment could be the death knell for the accounting firm. NPR's Jackie Northam reports from Chicago.
The Justice Department gave Andersen until this morning to plead guilty. When that passed with no word, it made good on its threat to indict the accounting firm. Larry Thompson, Deputy Attorney General with the Justice Department, says the indictment alleges that Andersen knowingly destroyed important documents after federal regulators had opened an investigation into the Enron scandal.
The destruction initiative began on or about October 10th as Andersen foresaw imminent government investigations. The destruction continued through the SEC's announcement that an investigation had been launched and only ended nearly 1 month later when the SEC officially served Andersen with a subpoena for Enron documents.
The indictment alleges that Andersen took part in the wholesale destruction of Enron-related materials, shredding tons of paperwork and destroying electronic information. Thompson said it also alleges that shredding was not isolated to a few individuals, but was orchestrated by Andersen executives.
The obstruction effort was not just confined to a few isolated individuals or documents. This was a substantial undertaking over an extended period of time with a very wide scope. The Andersen firm instructed Andersen personnel in Portland, Oregon, Chicago, Illinois, and London, England to join in the shredding.
Before the indictment was announced, Andersen went on the offensive. It sent the Justice Department a letter saying it didn't have enough evidence to bring felony charges against the company. The letter, written by Richard Favretto with the law firm Meyer, Brown, Rowe & Ma, said the charges against Andersen represented a gross abuse of government power. Dan Richman, a professor of law at Fordham Law School, says accusing the government of overreaching is standard practice in this kind of case. What's unusual, Richman says, is that Andersen made the letter public.
It's a signal to the government that it's going to defend this case vigorously. It also has to be playing in the marketplace. Andersen is not just fighting an indictment, it's fighting to stay alive. And it needs to telegraph to its customers and potential customers that it is not going down quickly.
The letter says that an indictment could seriously jeopardize Andersen's future. It says that if the accounting firm did file for bankruptcy, it would cost thousands of employees their jobs and affect the lawsuits pending against the company. It also noted that an indictment would harm the 2,300 companies that Andersen audits because it couldn't sign off on the documents. David Reuter, a professor of law at Northwestern University's School of Law in Chicago, says this represents an important policy issue for the Justice Department.
I think the Justice Department should recognize that it is an arm of the U.S. government. It is not an independent agency, and it has some responsibility to avoid harm to the public good. The question of whether the Justice Department, by an indictment, should be able to cause the demise of a firm which might survive in the absence of that indictment is a very, very important question.
But the Justice Department says it considered all factors before charging Andersen, and in the end, hopes the indictment will be seen as a deterrent. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Chicago.
Lawyers for Enron were also under fire today on Capitol Hill. For the first time, Enron lawyers and the company's outside counsel, Vinson and Elkins, faced public questioning about their role in the energy company's collapse. Members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee tried to hold the lawyers accountable for approving questionable financial deals and failing to investigate allegations of impropriety. But the attorneys defended their actions, as NPR's Emily Harris reports.
Congressional representatives quickly found out that each of the six lawyers who testified claimed only limited roles, if any, in setting up Enron's off-book partnerships or approving deals between them. Republican Congressman Jim Greenwood asked Rex Rogers, Enron's associate general counsel, about Rogers' signature on a particular document. That document certified that two Enron employees who negotiated a deal between Enron and an LJM partnership did so with only each company's best interests in mind.
How did you ascertain that, in fact, these negotiations were on an arm's length basis?
My signing off on all of these deal approval sheets was for the limited purpose of Section 4A.
That's legalese for indicating a deal needs to be publicly disclosed. Rogers said his signature in no way confirmed the negotiations were legitimate. Enron's outside counsel, the law firm Vinson & Elkins, came under fire for not taking seriously allegations raised by company vice president Sharon Watkins. She warned last August that off-book arrangements could lead to Enron's collapse in a wave of accounting scandals. Vinson & Elkins' managing partner, Joseph Dilge, says his firm's investigation concluded that Watkins' concerns had merit, but recommended no further action because she raised nothing new.
The report did conclude that no further investigation was necessary because the appropriate senior-level officers of Enron were at that time fully aware of the primary concerns expressed by Ms. Watkins and, in fact, were taking actions to address them.
Dilge said lawyers don't control their clients' business decisions, like when to waive conflict of interest rules. He expressed confidence that Vinson & Elkins fulfilled all ethical and professional responsibilities. Little new information came out of today's hearing. Enron's general counsel, James Derrick, pointed his finger at auditors Arthur Andersen when asked why aggressive accounting practices were not investigated as part of a review of Sharon Watkins' concerns. Derrick told Democrat James Stupak there was no good reason to ask outside lawyers to report on accounting arrangements because Andersen was at that time a reputable firm.
No one had any reason to believe that the accounting was not technically correct, and they had discussed these very issues with the firm that our audit committee had determined was the appropriate accounting firm for the company.
So even though you saw the words aggressive and creative, you thought, oh, it's no big deal because Andersen said it was okay?
If the next sentence it says, and by the way, Andersen does not believe it's okay, that would have been obviously a great cause of concern.
Andersen has blamed Enron for not giving it enough information to accurately evaluate Enron's off-book arrangements. Enron's lawyers told committee members they knew nothing about a letter from former Enron chairman Ken Lay to employees asking for contributions to President Bush's campaign. One lawmaker compared the panel to the monkeys that see, hear, and speak no evil. Another said they were like thieves in blue suits and red ties. Emily Harris, NPR News, Washington.